I'm Steve Potter, and welcome to Cityscape. Although there were a few arrests, the streets of Ferguson were relatively quiet last night as the community continues to deal with the aftermath of the Michael Brown shooting. Coming up later in the hour, our children's book illustrator Mary Englebright will join us. Her drawing in reaction to the situation in Ferguson was temporarily taken down by Facebook because it was deemed offensive. Today she speaks out. And we'll also have some details about a memorial concert this weekend for ragtime pianist and scholar Traber Tishner. And we'll hear from a couple of performance artists to see how they're interpreting the events in Ferguson. We begin today with the story of a Central West End bookstore owner who, after taking part in a peaceful demonstration in Ferguson, decided to do something to help people and to make a difference. Joining us now from Left Bank Books, co-owner Jarek Steele, and store manager Wintai Gabru. Welcome to you both.
Thank you, Will.
Thank you for having us.
On August 14th, in the aftermath of the Michael Brown shooting, the two of you, along with Left Bank co-owner Chris Kleindienst, took part in a five-hour peaceful protest in Ferguson. Jarek, what got you there?
Well, I was watching the news coverage of the events leading up to that day, and it was really upsetting to me, and I felt like that I needed to sort of see for myself and show some support for the people of Ferguson and, you know, my friends who live there. And so Chris and I decided that we wanted to go to the vigil at the Arch, and we went there around 6 p.m. There was about 1,000 people near the Arch, and we participated in that and stayed for a while and decided that we weren't quite finished. We really needed to go and see for ourselves what was happening.
In Ferguson.
And a coworker of mine had been at the protests pretty much for the entire time, and I knew that she was going to be there. So we drove to Ferguson, and as soon as we got even close to where the protests were happening, it just became this really large crowd of people. And I have some anxiety in large crowds, so I started to get a little anxious just because there were there's a crush of mm-hmm. people. But that really quickly sort of turned around in my head because it became very clear that these were peaceful protesters. Angry, intense, yes, but very peaceful.
What was the mood like at the Arch before you went to Ferguson? Was that different?
Sad. It was really just sad. That's the word I can use to describe it.
But you hadn't planned on going to Ferguson.
I had it in my mind that we might.
Back in your mind.
Yeah, as I said before, I have some anxiety in large crowds, and I thought maybe the Arch scene would be enough. But I really needed to do some more.
Wintai, you are actually, have been for a few years, a resident of Ferguson.
Yes, that's right.
So I can't help but think that maybe you felt things a little more intensely than the rest of us simply because, you know, that's home.
Well, it's certainly my community, and I felt the need to be out there with my neighbors and other people in my community, so I felt drawn to the area, especially to the epicenter of where all the protests were happening.
Now, had you planned to meet Jarek that day?
No. I had planned to go myself, and I know that a coworker of ours, Sarah, had been there and been very active in the protests since the very beginning. And so I'd planned to see her, and so we kind of just all found each other.
And so what happened when you all met up?
We were at the police station. We were in a parking lot across from the police station where there was a smaller crowd but still a fairly large crowd. And Chris and I stayed there for a while. What started as chanting and singing and quickly turned into the biggest prayer circle I've ever seen in my life. And then some more, protesting and holding of signs and chanting and probably an hour. We were there for maybe an hour or so, and then we started texting back and forth with Wintai asking if she was around, and she met us there. She was on her way there anyway. So then the three of us met up at that protest and started talking about what we could do from there. I mean, to show up and protest and show some support in the community at the time is one thing, and that is a really important first step, is to show your face, show up. But an equally important second step is to find out how to continue the discussion after the news media leaves and after the protests.
And we'll talk about what you did to address that in just a second. That's Jarek Steele, co-owner of Left Bank Books. Store manager Wintai Gebru is here also. They were both at a peaceful protest one day in Ferguson following the Michael Brown shooting. So as two people that were there, I have not been on the site. Is everyone – just this is just your personal opinion – what you sense there. Is everyone there on the same page? Does everybody agree with how they feel about it?
Not at all, I don't think. It was my feeling that everyone was very welcoming to me, and it felt as soon as I got there that I was a brother in arms of sorts. People were very quick to welcome me to the front of the protest and to tell me what was going on that day, earlier in the day of the protest at other places. But I think that there are people who are there for different reasons. I think we were all drawn there for different reasons.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, Jarek, despite your adversity to crowds, and I sort of agree, understand that, did you ever, either of you, ever feel threatened in any way or any concern for your safety on any level?
Absolutely not. There wasn't one moment. I can't think of a single moment I was there that I felt that my safety was compromised. And there were a lot of folks who were understandably angry, justifiably angry, and tense. But I felt like these were decent and are decent people, and they were peacefully exercising their right to speak out. So
long story short, you're there, you're in the moment, and you decide you want to do something more than walk together. You decide you wanted to do something to make a difference in the community, and you've done it through your business, through your bookstore.
We have. The three of us decided that we wanted to, at the very least, put something up in the store, curate some sort of list of reading material that would speak to to race relations in this area in particular, possibly the policing in general of populations. And we had talked about it a little while for that evening and had come up with sort of a sketch of a plan. And we decided that we would go from there and do that. And then I was actually on Facebook, and a friend of mine posted a list of his own and linked to the store, and that's how I sort of figured it out. And I thought, oh, you know what? We need to start this right now. So I thanked him, posted what he had posted and a few of the other books that we had already started to think about. And then I decided really that the community needs to be involved in this as well. So it's become this community-curated list of reading material, blog posts, poems, films.
And people have contributed to it.
Absolutely.
Your customers and just random people through social media. And you're still developing this list.
Yeah, it's an ever-growing list.
What parameters do you use to judge about what to put on the list? How do you decide what to – I mean, were there things people suggested maybe you didn't think were appropriate for one reason or another? Or?
Well, largely the emails, the tweets, the Facebook posts that we got, and we were inundated with them, were very productive and communicative books. We found them very helpful. A lot of them were about incidents or written by people from the area, so there were a lot of them were local. So I don't know that we did much to weed anything out. You know, there are some books that were offered that were, you know, inflammatory, possibly incendiary. We found some of the books maybe not as productive, not as helpful in furthering a conversation. We had very loose parameters.
Yeah. So was it your idea to take a stand necessarily one way or the other on how you come down on who's to blame? Or do you purposely maybe not go there?
I think we are focusing predominantly on books that give context to the situation. So knowing that there are people who have power and use it wisely, and there are also people who have power and don't use it wisely. And there's a long, long history of deep racism in this community, which I think is indisputable at this point. So the books that we've chosen thus far, and I would also add that one of the ways we weed out what we can't put on the list is if they're out of print or we can't actually put our hands on them or something like that. So we obviously can't put them on our list. But the books that we did receive suggestions for speak to the history and the context of what I was just talking about.
Well, why don't we identify just a couple of those? And how many do you have altogether? Is it dozens and dozens?
Oh, gosh.
More?
Yeah, it grows. I haven't counted it today. But it's a long list. And I think if I put it together with the other resources like films and poems and articles and so forth, I would say there's probably about, 60, 70 books and
if
resources.
At the very least.
Yeah, yeah. It's probably longer than that.
Well, Wintai, why don't you choose one of the books that means something to you and sort of tell us about it, maybe share a little bit.
Okay. I read for the first time in 2010 a book by Michelle Alexander, who is a Ohio State University law professor. She wrote a book called The New Jim Crow, and it's a book about mass incarceration in the country and how policies that have led up to it really point to a racism in the system. And I thought it was wonderful. I made it, when I first started working at Left Bank Books, I made it my first staff pick just because I felt that people in the community needed to read this. Everyone needed to read this.
Would you share some of it?
Sure. There's a little part. She spends a lot of time talking about the individual bars that make up the cage that is institutional racism. And she says that only when we view the cage from a distance can we disengage from the maze of rationalizations that are offered for each wire and see how the entire apparatus operates to keep African Americans perpetually trapped. And I think that she made a wonderful point about that. She uses the entire book. She's a law professor, so she uses a lot of case study and just really wonderful individual personal perspective in it. I thought it was great.
Jarek, do you have one?
Yes. As I was preparing for this, I chose The Rise of the Warrior Cop by Radley Balko to focus on. And I chose this because of the images that were coming out of the Ferguson protests of police in military gear, and this sparked a debate about how police forces use their equipment and if they're trained to do so, and how do they do these things. This book gives a really deep history of the policing of people, and I won't go into a lot of that because I think it's a really good read, and you should do that. But there is one passage that I thought was particularly poignant for just this discussion, and it was set in the 1850s, and it was around the Anthony Burns affair, which was essentially a runaway slave who escaped to freedom and then was returned. This escalated into a situation where there were a lot of protesters, and there was militiamen and troops brought in to control the crowd. And I'll just read for just a moment. It says, there were numerous injuries, a few of them serious, but somewhat miraculously there were no fatalities. Once the streets were cleared, another group of troops marched the prisoner from the courthouse to the steamship waiting for him at the docks. From Boston Harbor, the site of the Boston Tea Party, the ship and federal troops aboard it took Anthony Burns back to Virginia, from a city nicknamed the Cradle of Liberty to the shackles awaiting him in Richmond. It hadn't yet been 100 years since the Boston Massacre, in which the British soldiers fired first into the air and then directly into a mob of angry protesters, effectively sparking the American Revolution. Yet, on the morning of June 2, 1854, it was U.S. soldiers who lined Boston streets, who fired shots from a cannon positioned in the town square as a warning to fellow Americans, and who used that threat of military force to silence the speech of American citizens. And I thought that was poignant because it wasn't the military who were policing the streets in Ferguson. It was, but they looked a lot like it.
So the books, the poems, the blogs that you've mm-hmm. identified, how can the public access those? And yes. How can they contribute?
OK, Okay. We have the list up on our website, which is www.left-bank.com. You can reach it from there. To make suggestions, you can email them to info@left-bank.com or tweet them to our Twitter account with the hashtag Ferguson Reads.
And we'll have all that on the Cityscape page at stlpublicradio.org. Bookstores are places where people meet and congregate, socialize, and talk.
Yeah, we hope so.
So what have you been hearing at Left Bank? Does everybody agree?
No, but, you know, we found that even though not everybody agrees or it comes from the Ferguson activity from the same place, you know, we found that people have been incredibly civil to us. Mm-hmm. People have been incredibly kind. And even though not everybody agrees with whatever side, they still have found our bookstore as a community resource and as a place to meet.
Now, you're planning some sort of pop-up reading group. Where does that stand?
Yes, we are very excited about this. It has come basically out of our list. We thought, we shouldn't just be reading these books. We should be talking about them. And so we are having a community-focused pop-up reading group. We're going to meet for the first time September 25th, which is a Thursday, at our bookstore at 7 p.m. And we're going to be talking about the first book on the list, which is The New Jim Crow by Michelle Alexander.
Well, one final thing I think I want to ask you, Jarek. I'm not sure how to put it. You're a business person. You operate a business to make a living. It's a for-profit business. And here you are. I won't say you're really taking a position, but you're getting involved in a controversial issue where it's a hot-button issue where people disagree and have different opinions. You risk alienating people. So as a business person, was that in your thought process at all, a concern for you, and where do you come down on that?
I don't think there's a minute in my day that I'm not thinking of how I'm doing affects the business that I have. And I don't want to alienate anyone, and I certainly don't want to create a space where it's not safe and accessible for people to express their own opinions. And I think it's my responsibility. My responsibility really as a white person in a discussion about race is mostly to listen and ask questions. And it's my responsibility as a citizen and a business owner to use whatever power I have to make sure that everyone's strength in this community is promoted. And I think that's what we're doing here. Now, I read from this The Rise of the Warrior Cop, knowing that that would be the passage that I wrote would probably be controversial. But I also know that we are capable of talking about these issues and disagreeing.
You're just trying to open dialogue.
Absolutely.
I'm reading between the lines. Wintai, finally, as a resident of Ferguson, you have any reason to feel like something positive might happen?
I think I have every reason to think that something positive might happen. I feel that there are safe spaces all around the city for people to come together and talk about what's happening and talk about their feelings and what they their view. And because of that, I've been incredibly encouraged. And I've also been really encouraged by people coming into Ferguson who really want to help the people who live there and want to work towards a happier future for all of us.
That's Wintai Gebru. She's a store manager for Left Bank Books in the Central West End. Co-owner Jarek Steele has also been here. If you'd like a list of the books, they compiled books, poems, blogs, and other things to help people deal with what's going on in Ferguson and help you work through it mentally. Go to our website and we'll have a link to all that information. You can contribute to that as well. Jarek, Wintai, thank you so much for being here and sharing what you're doing and how you feel.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Next on Cityscape, a conversation with artist Mary Engelbreit. This is St. Louis Public Radio.